जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन भल्लभ गिरिवान धारी जय गोपी जन भल्लभ गिरिवान धारी यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना चेरावन चारी जमुना चेरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बाबा गिरिवान धारी यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना चेरावन चारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Jagana Jaya Jagana Jaya Balade Jaya Subhadra Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Brihadaranyaka Akacharya Astu Tirasita Sisiman His Divine Grace Abhay Charananda Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada ki Antaraj Himhad Bhagavatam Ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth chapter, the 30th verse. The title of the chapter is Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu. Sri Paraduvacha Matirna Krishne Paratatsvatova Mito vipadyeta griha vritanam Adanta Gaubhya Visitam Tamishlam Punak Punash Charavita Charavananam Matayana Krishne Parata Svatova Mito Bipadyeta Grihavratanam Adanta Gaubhir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punash Charavitav Charavananam Matirna Krishne Paratak Svatova Mito Bipadyeta Grihavritanam Adanta Gaubhir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punash Charavitav Charavananam Vaishnavas? Matirna Krishna Parata Svatova Tovi Vajita Vitakrikanam Tamamisham Nakamastavita Charvananam Matayama Krishna Parata Svatova Tirma Krishna Parata Svatova Mito Vibhatita Vitak Vitanam Adanta Gaubhir Visitam Tamishram Punak Punas Charvita Charananam Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova Mato Vibhadyeta Grihavritanam Adanta Gaubhir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punash Charavita Charavananam Vaishnavis? Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova Mito Bipadyeta Grihavritanam Adanta Gaubhir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punas Charavita Charavananam Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova Mito Vipadyeta Gritavitanam Adanta Gaubhir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punas Charvita Charvananam Shri Prahlada Vacha Prahlad Maharaj said, Mati, inclination, na, never, Krishne, unto Lord Krishna, Paratak, from the instructions of others, Svatak, from their own understanding, Va. Either. Mitak. From combined effort. Abhipadyeta. Is developed. Graha vratanam. Of persons too addicted to the materialistic bodily conception of life. Adanta, uncontrolled. Gobhi, by the senses. Vishatang, entering. Tamishram, hellish life. Punak, again. Punak, again. Charvita, things already chewed. Charavananam, who are chewing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, P.J. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to material life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Purport. In this verse, the word Matir na Krishne refer to devotional service rendered to Krishna. So-called politicians, erudite scholars, and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes. But their misunderstandings of Krishna will not yield them any profit. Because such politicians, philosophers, and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially, for them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible. Matir na Krishne. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhakti Amam Abhijanati, only through devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is. The so-called politicians and scholars think of Krishna as fictitious. The politicians say that Krishna is different from the Krishna depicted in Bhagavad Gita, even though he accepts Krishna and Rama as the supreme. He thinks of Rama and Krishna as impersonal, because he has no idea of service to Krishna. This is only business. Is punak punash charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed again and again. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world with their bodily senses. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grihavrata, those whose only aim is to live comfortably with the body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. The two expressions, grihavrata and charvita charvananam, indicate that a materialistic person tries to enjoy sense gratification in different bodily forms, life after life, but is still unsatisfied. In the name of personalism, this ism or that ism, such persons always remain attached to the materialistic way of life. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:44, Bhagaishwarya Prashaktanam Taya Parita Chetasam, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment, the materialistic opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Those who are attached to material enjoyment cannot be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. They cannot understand Bhagavan Krishna or his instructions, Bhagavad Gita. Adantir gober vishitam tamishram. Their path actually leads towards hellish life. As confirmed by Rishabdev, Mahat Sevam Dvaram Ahura Vimukte, one must try to understand Krishna by serving his devotees, The word Mahat refers to a devotee. Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananna manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the greatest souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Bhagavad Gita 9:13. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service 24 hours a day. As explained in the following verses, unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Hiranyakashipu wanted to know where Prahlad had gotten this Krishna consciousness. Who had taught him? Prahlad sarcastically replied, "My dear father, persons like you never understand Krishna. One can understand Krishna only by serving a Mahat, a great soul. Those who try to adjust material conditions are said to be chewing the chewed. No one has been able to adjust material condition, but life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. Unless one is properly trained by a Mahat, a Mahatma, or unalloyed devotee of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's understanding Krishna and his devotional service." Om agana timirandasya ganan gana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha mukam karati vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripa tvam aham vande shri guru dinataranam nama om vishnu padaya krishna prashtaya bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Praschacha Desatarane. So this is, as we were told the other day when Jai Jagannath ended his class before this verse, that this verse is a very important verse. And the whole content of the story, and especially, specifically, Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his father, to his classmates, to us, were very much relished by Srila Prabhupada, and he spoke about them quite often. So in this purport and in this verse, there's two main things to discuss. There's what we're supposed to know, or what is the ultimate goal of human life, the ultimate understanding, the prayojana. And there's the why, or how we can know it, and what keeps us from knowing it. Because obviously Hiranyakashipu had a problem, and his problem wasn't that he hadn't studied the Shastra. He was very learned in the scripture. Actually, I was once in Chopati, and Radhanath Swami was giving a class, and it was on a couple of chapters before this, and Hiranyakashipu was giving some instruction. He was giving some instruction to his family members, and they were lamenting over the death of Hiranyaka. It was a while before this. And Hiranyakashipu was giving them some very good instruction. Radhanath Swami said at the end of reading the verse and the purport, he said, "If you didn't hear that this was spoken by Hiranyakashipu, you'd think it was a Sunday feast lecture given by some devotee at a Hare Krishna temple." It was very, very good advice about not being attached to the body, etc., etc. So Hiranyakashipu, he was a very learned person. He knew very, very well the scripture. And of course we know the Leela, that he was a resident of Vaikunth. But in this particular exchange, he was of demoniac descent, and he was speaking very good philosophy. Even Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, they knew a lot of philosophy. It wasn't that they were stupid by any stretch of the imagination. But somehow or other, they couldn't get the point. And what is the point? The point is that By rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality, one becomes advanced in spiritual life. One can go back to Godhead. And how does one achieve that? We'll discuss that in a few moments. So I'd like to take a look at a particular section of the Mahabharata. There was one incident, maybe many of you know, where the Pandavas were in exile, and they were traveling, and they became very thirsty. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, he asked his brothers, one after the other, to go and find water, and each of them went in succession to find water. Actually, I think it was Arjuna that went first. And they came to a lake, and they immediately wanted to drink and bring water for their other family members. But they were stopped. They were stopped by a yaksha, or a baka, depending on, you know, his appearance, who he was. It was Yamaraj. So they were stopped at the lake, and they were told, don't drink. Because if you drink, this is my lake, and if you drink, then you'll die. But first you have to answer my questions. If you answer my questions, then you can drink. But if you drink this water before you answer my questions, you'll die. And so Arjuna thought, I'm a powerful warrior. What do you mean I'm going to die? You're got to be kidding. So he was so thirsty that he ignored the question and he took some water and he died. One after another, each brother came and they saw the other one, two, three, laying there dead. And yet they drank. They all heard the same thing. Answer the questions. Otherwise, you drink the water and you're finished. But all of them drank the water without honoring the question. And they died. And finally, Yudhisthira, who was waiting. What happened to Arjuna? What happened to Bhima? What happened to Nakula? What happened to Sahadev? So he went himself. And there he saw his four brothers laying on the ground dead. And his first thought was different than the others. His first thought wasn't, I'm so thirsty, I need to get a drink of water. His first thought is, how could this happen to my brothers? They're so qualified, so powerful, so amazing. Who could have, or what supernatural power could have caused my brothers to be here dead? So he also kneeled to reach them, and then he heard the voice. The voice said, your brothers died because they wouldn't answer my questions. They wanted water, and they didn't. I told them, if you answer my questions, then you'll be able to drink. But they were unwilling to answer my questions. Will you answer my questions? And Yudhisthira agreed. And what ensued after that was a relatively famous discussion between Yudhisthira and what turned out to be his father. And there were many, 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 many questions, but their last, and each question had multiple parts. And Yudhisthira answered them one by one, by one, by one, by one, by one. At the very end of the discussion, the yaksha asked a series of questions, four questions. He said, who is truly happy? What is most wonderful? What is the proper path? And what is the news? So we hear about, Prabhupada quotes, talks about quite often two of these, but we'll talk about all of them. Especially Prabhupada always talks about what is the most wonderful thing. We've all heard, right? No, at least many of us know. What is the most wonderful thing? The most wonderful thing is, as Yudhisthira replied, that everybody is seeing death around them everywhere. They see, my father has died, my grandfather has died, my great-grandfather has died, my great-great-grandfather has died, so many people. But me, I'm never going to die. Somehow, I'm going to beat the rap. So that's the most amazing thing, as Yudhisthira answered. He said, it's amazing how people think that they're never going to die, even though they see so many people die. But the first question that the yaksha asked was, who is happy? What's real happiness? And Yudhisthira's answer is very interesting. He says that somebody who cooks in his own house, who eats in his own house, who gathers the vegetables that he eats and prepares his foodstuffs or has his foodstuffs prepared in his own house, whose home in the sixth part of the day when the sun is going down, that person is actually in his house so that he can eat food prepared in his house. That person who's not in debt and doesn't have to go out of his home, far away from home, in order to make a living, that person is truly happy. So look around. Who's truly happy? How many people actually eat in their own home anymore? And if they eat in their own home, it's only because they called out and got pizza delivered, right? That's how they got to eat in their own home. But their food is not cooked with love and devotion. It's not prepared for the health or the welfare of the family. It's prepared in passion. It's a box. It's a it's a can. It's a mix. It's dried or it's frozen or it's something. That was one of Prabhupada's. Yesterday, Ramnath Swami was talking about Prabhupada's experience with Sally Agarwal. One of the things that Prabhupada mentions is that he was very intrigued by frozen vegetables. He had never, because refrigerators were non-existent, what to speak of freezers. And so he had never seen frozen vegetables, this idea of just freezing something and then throwing it in a pot for 2 minutes and it's, you know, then it's edible, supposedly. But there's more to it than that. There's the idea that my livelihood is done, it's a skill that I have, some service that I offer to humanity. I do it from my home. I don't go out and slave for some slave driver and get a pittance in return. Prabhupada tells a story of people, and I see it. I see it all the time. Even, you know, I see it in America, what to speak of in India. But people get on the train or they get in the car and they drive for 2.5 hours to get to work. They have to leave at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning. If they try to leave late, then they get trapped in traffic and it takes an extra hour of just being in gridlock. By the time you get where you're going, your nerves are tied in knots, right? And so you go there, you drive, you work for 8 hours, 9 hours. You get a few minutes for lunch. You go and buy something in the store, Starbucks. You get, you know, a bagel or something, some coffee, or even worse than that, which we won't talk about here in front of the Lord. And then you come home again, another 2.5 hours. And Prabhupada tells the story of some person who was going like that, going like that, going like that. He had a child, and he was coming home. He was leaving before the child woke up and coming home after the child went to sleep. And then finally the child was getting older and older, and now the child was staying up later. So now it was 8:30, 9 o'clock, the man is coming home from work and he says to his mom, "Who's this? Who's this man that's coming here?" And she explains, "This is your father. I've never seen him before." Because he's working so hard like an ass, every morning leaving, every evening coming back late, staying in the city over the weekend. So many traveling, and I see it even now. Even now people are, the consultancy and other jobs require that you fly out on Monday, you come back on Saturday, you stay for a few hours, then you have to fly out again on the next Monday early in the morning because you have to be at work by 9, so you have to take a plane at 5 in the morning and be where you're going. And then you get, you know, gold premium credits for being the most frequent flyer. So this is the nature of materialistic life. And so Yudhisthira describes that happiness, true happiness, is just being able to live peacefully at home and eat with your family and not have to be in debt. Because I know many people who go to college for many, many years thinking, now I'm going to get some education, I'm going to be able to earn a living, and the end of it all, they're in debt for thousands and thousands of dollars, right? So the first how many years of their living is just going, I see some acknowledging, smiled, that the money is just going to pay back the debt. You're still living like a pauper. You were living like a pauper when you were a student. Now you're still living like a pauper. And even when you're not living like a pauper, Radhananda Swami last night at dinner, he was telling this a story of one heart surgeon, very famous heart surgeon, who lives in Sarasota, Florida. I'm going to have to go check him out. And he's very, very, very wealthy. Extremely wealthy, very famous, lectures, does heart surgery for the greatest dying persons, dying persons who have achieved some fame in this life. And one day he had a religious experience, and it shook him to the core. Somehow he had a vision, and that vision made him understand in his being that there was a God. And he became so convinced by that vision that he decided to use all his money, or at least a lot of his money, in trying to find God. So he began traveling all around, seeking out holy persons, and he went to some Buddhist monastery, and he was sitting and talking to a Buddhist monk, and that Buddhist monk, he was a very advanced monk, he was giving him some instruction, and all of a sudden the Buddhist monk was like, looking at him with this shocked look on his face, and he said, "What is it? What is it?" He said, "I don't know how to explain this to you, but when I look at you, I see Krishna standing next to you." That's what the monk said to him. So then the man thought, "Well, this is another sign from Krishna, you know, so from God." So he went to Mayapur. He went to Mayapur. He didn't meet devotees, but he went to Mayapur. And in Mayapur, he didn't meet devotees either. He hardly saw anybody or talked to anybody, but he saw the deities. And he decided to surrender his life to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to Radha Madhava. So, and then he came back, and you know, now he has come in contact with some devotees, and what he's decided to do for service, Radhananda Swami said he just stays all day when he's not working. He stays all day, he and his brother, and they just read Bhagavatam. He said they study Bhagavatam. And now his service that he wants to do, he wants to take some of his money and he wants to build a heart hospital in Mayapur. So he's working on that project with some of the devotees from Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So, but the privilege of being able to live a peaceful life and give your time to devotional service. Give your time and your energy to devotional service. Eat your real food that's prepared by people who love you and offered to God in love. That's real happiness. That's real happiness. But we're not looking for that happiness. In this material world, we're looking for something else, and therefore we find something else. And the next question that the Bhakta asked was, what's the path? How do I find true happiness? And this verse also Prabhupada quotes many, many times. He talks about Mahajana Yena Gataksapanta, right? That the Tarko Pratishta Shrutaya Vibhinam. That where do we find happiness? That happiness can't be found when you're talking to rishis. Rishis, they all have a different opinion. Prabhupada talks about that too, right? How you can't be a real, genuine rishi unless you argue with everybody else. So everybody has a different opinion. And even the Vedas, Shrutayo Vibhinam, even the Vedas, they all have different things to say. That's why Vyasadeva was so disturbed after he'd compiled all the Vedas. When Narada saw him, he said, "You don't look so good. What's up?" He said, "Well, I wrote all this Vedic literature. I divided it up, but I'm still not satisfied." And the reason? Because it's so confusing. Narada told him, you've not spoken the essence. You've given so many other things, the essence is hidden. So that's what Yudhisthira says, that this knowledge is hidden, and it's very confusing to a person if you don't have a GPS. Right? You need a GPS to get around, otherwise it's very confusing. So you need, where do I find my GPS? Well, the truth is hidden in the hearts of the Mahajans. Mahajana Yena Gataksapanta. They know the truth. And if you want to know the truth, then you have to approach the Mahajan, and you have to fall at his feet, and you have to render service with love. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna. If you want to know the truth, then inquire submissively, and render service, and the self-realized soul will impart knowledge unto you because he's seen the truth. He's your GPS, or she, whoever. That self-realized person who has seen the truth in their heart, they have the knowledge that you require. So Mahajanayena Kataksapanta. You can't know the truth without approaching such a person. So then the last question, which I want to read if I can figure out how to find it. The last question he asked is, what is the news? And we don't so much hear this, we hear it in the Bhagavatam because there are other places where it's said. But he said, he speaks a little bit of an analogy. And he says that the passing of time, basically what he says is the passing of time is taking away the life of the living entity. So that's the news, that every day the sun is rising and every day the sun is setting. And as the sun rises, you wake up and you get a day dead. By the time the sun sets, a day of your life is gone. And people are going through this cycle day after day after day after day. And in the end, they sit on a rocking chair and they lament about what happened in their life and why they didn't marry Susan instead of Sally. Right? And they have a big bucket list with all so many things in the bucket. That's a new thing now, right? They talk about the bucket list. You have a bucket list, your list of things that you want to do before you die. And I tell you something, whatever's in that bucket list, that's the list you give to Krishna that says, these are the things that I want to do in my next life. And then Krishna gives you a body to fulfill your bucket list. So you should try to not have anything in your bucket list except service to Krishna. Because if you have other things in your bucket list, basically what you're doing is you're ordering your next body. So this was Yudhisthira's discussion, and this is where it went. It went, what does happiness look like? What's the path to achieve the supreme happiness? And what's the news? The news is the same old thing. Prabhupada used to say that he got headache. Sometimes the devotees would bring him the Time magazine because they thought Prabhupada needed to know what was going on in the material world. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to preach to the people. And Prabhupada said that just by looking at the pictures, he got a headache. So, but he didn't need to know the news because the news is the same news. Hiranyakashipu was the same news. It was the same thing. It was the same thing. He was looking for that kind of happiness, material wealth, fame, right? He wanted all those same things. He was looking for labha, puja, pratishta. He wanted everybody to worship him, everybody to think he was great, to worship him instead of God. He wanted to be famous. He wanted to be known, a household word, Hiranyakashipu. And he wanted to have lots of wealth. Everything gold and soft bed. That's what his name means, Hiranyakashipu. Soft bed and gold. Gold, Hiranyakashipu, soft bed. So those were his aspirations. That's what he wanted. And he got it. He got fame, he got wealth, he got a soft bed, lots of soft beds. Not only that, but he had women to go with the beds. He had all kinds of things. But he wasn't happy because you could see he was fearful, he was in anxiety, he was always afraid that someone would take away his happiness. Even somebody who wasn't demoniac, like Lord Indra, he had the same experience, right? Even though he had so much wealth, he was the king of the demigods, he was always watching his back. And as soon as he saw that Prithu Maharaj was doing a little bit too many, you know, something was getting a little bit close, then he would come and cause havoc. Because he was afraid, this person's going to take away my power. This person is going to interfere with my pratishta. So because of that fear, because of that attachment, because of that illusion about what is happiness, we and Hiranyakashipu couldn't really understand the absolute truth. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj is saying to his father, and Prabhupada says sarcastically, because it was beyond hope. Therefore, it was sarcastic. That Prahlad knew that, what am I going to say to this guy? You know, he's my father. I'm supposed to love him, but what am I going to say to this guy? He's hopeless. He's hopelessly entangled in material life. He's hopelessly looking for fame, profit, adoration, distinction. He wants those things so much that there's nothing that I'm going to be able to say to him that he can hear anything. So Prahlad Maharaj said to him sarcastically, "You want to understand where I got my power, but really you don't want to understand where I got my power. You want to hear that I did some material thing and it made me really strong. I performed some kind of austerities. I stood on my big toes for 100,000 years. That's what Hiranyakashipu did. He stood on his big toes. He stood on his big toe for 100 celestial years, and he got his power. So he was expecting to hear from Prahlad Maharaj, what austerity did you do that you became so powerful? I didn't see. You're only 5 years old. How could you have achieved this power? And Prahlad Maharaj said to him, "You'll never understand. People who are too attached to material life, people who are interested in chewing the chewed, there's no hope. You'll never understand. It's beyond your capacity to understand." Because Krishna says for those people, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 19th verse, he says, for those people, I cast them down. They go lower and lower and get more and more entangled in the material world. They don't really want to know. They have no interest in the absolute truth. And therefore, their path to the hellish planets, they have a GPS that goes in the other direction. Right? The other direction. They're headed in the wrong direction. So Prahlad Maharaj is not only giving Hiranyakashipu the qualifications or the disqualifications of hearing about spiritual life, he's also giving him what you need to know, but he's not able to hear. And so for us, if we have attachment in material life, we won't be able to hear the absolute truth. We can study till we're purple in the face, and we won't be able to hear the absolute truth because we want to adulterate it. Our heart, our mind, our senses, we want to adulterate the absolute truth to fit our agenda. There was a very nice saying that I heard from a great devotee giving class that he said, we often beg Krishna to change our circumstances when we're suffering. We beg Krishna to change our circumstances. But in reality, Krishna has created our circumstances to change us. He's put us in a particular situation with particular people in particular arrangement so that we will work through something, some anartha in the heart, some material attachment. Krishna, because if he sees that we have some sincere desire to serve him, then he'll send us help, right? He sends us the spiritual master. We hear that he sends us the spiritual master. And Bhagavan Ji, the fortunate soul, Guru Krishna Prasad Bhai Bhakti Lata Beej, he gets a spiritual master, and that spiritual master gives him Krishna. Krishna gives him the spiritual master. The spiritual master gives him Krishna. Such a fortunate person. But if you don't listen, or you maintain material attachments, we chant this dutifully every morning at top speed, the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. Blah, 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 blah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And at the end, we say, you won't get Krishna prema if you maintain material attachments even after having so many instructions in the matter. It's not that you have to worry about having material attachments. We have material attachments, but we maintain them. We protect them. We protect them dutifully. We protect them from being disturbed by transcendental knowledge. Don't disturb my anarthas. I like them. I'll give up some of them. I'll look renounced. I'll look advanced. I'll do all the things that I'm supposed to do externally. But internally, I'm protecting. I'm protecting my material desires. And therefore, I'm maintaining material attachments, and therefore, I can't hear. I can hear some things, but I can't hear everything. I can't hear the essence of spiritual life, which is to develop humility and to become a sincere servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, and take instruction from the Mahatma, Mahatsaya Dwara Mahura Vimukte. That's what opens the door. The other day we were hearing that the door, the last door that we have to enter, figuratively speaking, to pure devotional service, to Prema Bhakti, Krishna has the thing locked from the inside. There's a deadbolt on that door, and you can't open it from the outside. Not possible. So how do you get in? You get in when the pure devotee knocks on your behalf and says, I'm here with my shishya. And he's following my instruction with sincerity and devotion. Please let him in. And then the door becomes opened. You can't get in any other way. You can knock, you can show your credentials, you can pay off the guy, you can slip 1,000 rupees in your passport. It won't make any difference. You won't get in. So this is the instruction we learn from this purport and from the repeated instructions that we're going to get from Prahlad Maharaj, that we have to know, knowing the sambandha, that's nice, knowing what we're going for. We need to know that. We need to know what we're going for. Because if we don't know what we're going for, then the GPS will program it the wrong way and we'll head, like Hiranyakashipu, for wealth, for fame, for worship. We'll head for those things. But even if we know what we're going for, the abhidhaya, the process, will be hindered if we're proud. Sometimes I see the GPS. I never use a GPS. I don't know how to use it. I'm not that advanced in technology. But people who use the GPS, when you get somehow in their own turf, then the thing says, you know, turn left, and they say, well, I don't like that road, I'll turn right instead, you know. And then there's some construction there, and they get stuck, and they're in trouble. It's because they've adjusted it. The spiritual master says, do this, but they think, well, you know, he said that, but, you know, he's a little old-fashioned, and it doesn't really apply necessarily, so I'll do my way. So we have to be careful what the adjustments are made for, that we're not adjusting things because of our own anarthas, that we're not trying to avoid the essence of the instruction because we're lacking humility, because we're, pride is entering our life. The other day, Jai Jagannath Prabhu was describing very wonderfully the different stages of questioning and devotional service and how we advance through those different stages. But also Maya has different stages of energy that she throws at you in order to knock you off the progressive ladder. She, you know, as you advance in devotional service, Maya isn't going to offer you the same thing she offered you when you were a neophyte and you had to give up your old friends and you had to give up cigarettes and you had to give up whatever you had to give up. Everybody has a different thing they have to give up. So at beginning, you know, if you're here, you're living here, you've given up a lot of things. And people look at you in the material world, they look at us and they think, you're so austere. 4 regulative principles? Wow. You know, how do you do it? Even Prabhupada also always quipped about that person in Russia that he used to talk to and said, you know, he said, I want you to make me a Brahmin. And Prabhupada said, well, it's very simple. All you have to do is follow these 4 regulative principles. He said, okay, 4, I can handle that. What are they? And then he heard no illicit sex. He said, forget it. There's no way I can do that. Out of the question. So we have a hard time just doing the basic 4 regulative principles, right? But as we gradually move through them and we become confident or comfortable following those regulations, we become affected by complacency. And Maya is watching. She's watching really carefully. She's watching. And she sees us making advancement. And as we're making advancement, what comes with advancement? We get, you know, fame, people like us, they offer us adulation, they chant our name in the Jai Om prayers. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila so-and-so Maharaj ki jai. So, you know, so then you get fame, you get people offering you respects, people offering you money, people offering you flower petals, people offering you garlands, people falling at your feet. And if you think wow, this is awesome. You're finished. You're finished. So the beginning, the seeds, if the seeds are not destroyed, the seeds of desire in the heart are not destroyed, and we don't work on them because they're not initially, and through much of devotional service, Prabhupada says the only place there's true steadiness is in prema. And we see that in various places in the Bhagavatam, that there is a chance that even when we're on the progressive path, Prabhupada says on the royal road, even on the royal road, there are accidents. So we move up, we have to be so cautious that we don't become affected by the weeds in the heart, and Maya very skillfully tries to water them. That's her job. Her job is to keep the riffraff out of the spiritual world. She ain't going to let you in there if you have any desires in the heart. So she's going to test and see, well, you have a desire for profit, a desire for fame, a desire for adoration. You want to be big man on the totem pole? Let's see what that does to your spiritual life. And she'll test you and continue to test you at higher and higher levels of spiritual, as you progress up the spiritual path, the challenges become more and more difficult, more and more difficult. So I remember reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita, watching the journey of Gopakumar, and he went through so many different levels. And the only place that he... that it's described that he really kind of panicked was when he was in, I don't know the name of the place, maybe you know, huh? Muktidham, yeah. He was in Muktidham, and he kind of felt the pull to the Brahmajyoti. It was like being, it felt like he was being pulled into a vacuum cleaner, this suction of the whole, you know, the impersonal void being pulled into the void. He said, let me out of here. And that was like, chant the mantra, quick. And, you know, let me escape. That was the only time in the Leela where you really felt that this is scary. You know, other times he would kind of relish the available spiritual path and then feel an urge to move on. But when he was in Muktidham, he became panic-stricken. This is not where I want to go. So all those different levels, so high up there, and they're still that pull, that strong pull. Come, come. There's impersonalism. There's I am God. Prabhupada calls that the last snare of nescience. I am God. That even that, or I am like God because I'm the spiritual master. I'm really powerful. So one has to be very, very careful, very meticulous, and very humble. That the head is always bowed. Prabhupada was very much like that. He was always very humble. And any praise, any gratitude, any worship that he got, he passed it up. These are not my words. These are Krishna's words. I'm just an instrument. I didn't do this. My spiritual master ordered me. I'm just a servant. So we can learn these qualities even from Prahlad Maharaj. Right? From Prahlad Maharaj and the other great devotees in the Bhagavatam. And even from Hiranyakashipu, we can learn. We can learn what not to do. We can learn not to become enamored, not to become proud, not to become overly... not to become overly sure that we can control the material nature by our power. Actually, in the Divine and Demoniac Nature, 16th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada talks about also that the quality that differentiates between a saintly person, a person who's divinely endowed, and a person who's endowed with demoniac qualities, is that they try to understand what's going on and they try to make the right choice. He said to Arjuna, the reason you're a godly, the reason I can tell, Prabhupada says, the reason Arjuna is godly is because he's trying to figure it out. He's asking right questions to right people. And because he's asking right questions to right people and he's listening to the answers and trying to understand what is the best thing to do, even though his mind and his senses are saying, you don't want to do this. Fighting is not what you want to do. But he's hearing again and again that Krishna wants him to fight, and he keeps trying to wiggle out of it, but it doesn't quite work. And the ultimate issue, Karishye Vachanam Tava, I'll do what you say. Even if it's uncomfortable, I'll do what you say. So this is the wonderful quality of the devotee, and this is the quality that Hiranyakashipu was missing. And so even though he was in the presence, we hear Lava Macha Sadhu Sangha, he had so much association with a wonderful devotee. Prahlad Maharaj was a wonderful devotee who had a wonderful spiritual master and who had imbibed all the qualities and all the learning of a pure devotee. And Hiranyakashipu had his association, and he couldn't understand a word. He couldn't understand a word because he was covered over and he didn't have that first quality, that quality of humility. He didn't want to hear. And because he was enamored by material things, he was unable to hear. Chewing the chewed. Some analogies, you know, they're eternally valid. Because here you hear in the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj is talking to Hiranyakashipu how many millenniums ago, and he says, chewing the chewed. And when I was in school, we used to have this thing called ABC gum. Do we have ABC gum still? Already been chewed. Already been chewed gum. And so yeah, we'd have desks, and on the bottom of the desk, there would be ABC gum, you know, stuck underneath. We find it on the pews. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So still, even this day and age, the concept is still there, chewing the chewed, getting a little bit more something out of the something before you finally give up the gum and stick it there for somebody else to make an effort. So we don't want to be like that. We see in the material world, everybody is chasing after that thing. After that thing which everybody has chased after already millions of times for millions of years, chased after that thing and hasn't achieved happiness, and still they're lined up on the freeway like a parking lot trying to get there, to get their paycheck, to spend their paycheck on the parking and on the car and on the insurance and on the tolls and on the... So you get a house and your cat lives in the house. You're out working all day. The cat or the dog lives in the house. So we don't want to be like that. We want to be able to cultivate these qualities of devotional service so that we can hear and understand this transcendental knowledge. So I'll stop there. I wanted to read just a little thing from Srila Prabhupada that I found that I thought was very interesting. He says, when I wanted to start this movement in India, I approached many friends. Sir, you have got four boys. Give me one boy. I want to make him a devotee. And they refused. Oh, they would say, Swamiji, what will the benefit? How will he benefit by becoming a devotee? After all, he has to earn his livelihood. And Prabhupada laughed. Nobody agreed. Everyone wants that his son should be hardworking like the hogs and the dogs and satisfy his senses. That's all everyone wants. That is civilization. No one wants that his son should be a devotee. They will not tolerate it. If somebody's son comes to us to become a devotee, I have experienced the father and mother immediately come, oh, Swamiji, what are you doing? But his son becomes hippie, that is okay. That he will tolerate. But he becomes devotee, oh, we can't tolerate. How can we? You see, that is nature. If the son is going astray by drinking, oh, young men, they will do that. But he becomes a devotee, he immediately becomes warned. Oh, what danger! He's going to be a devotee. This is the nature of demons. If the father, mother are demons, how can you expect a nice child? You see? That is the defect of modern civilization. Therefore, the whole world is unhappy. There is need of devotees, need of real Brahmins. That is wanted. I don't have the diacritics here. That is wanted. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement, even a certain little percentage of people become Krishna conscious, the whole face of the world will change. It is so nice. So I thought this story is true life with Giriraj Maharaj and so many others. Actually, Prabhupada was with Brahmananda Prabhu, who just left us. Prabhupada was very grateful to his mother for giving him two boys, he said. And he asked her once, because she kind of became very involved in Krishna consciousness, very favorable. And she outlived her son, Brahmananda. His sister came to our memorial ceremony in Alachua. And it was described that when the mother came to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada asked her for some donation. And she said, "Donation? You're asking for a donation, Swamiji? I've already given you a donation. You have my two sons. I've donated them to you." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, very nice. Okay, I accept." So I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, maybe we can have some discussion. We don't have much time, but... Yes? The reservoir of all questions. Jai Balaram.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You were mentioning in the beginning that Hiranyakashipu and Duryodhana, they had a lot of wisdom, but they couldn't use it because they were... Prahlad Maharaj said that he didn't like this philosophy that even despite having a lot of wisdom, one still sees between friends
and
enemies.
It's not really wisdom.
Yeah.
It's knowledge in the lowest sense of the meaning of knowledge.
So this reminds me of a couple of verses in the Gita in chapter 5:18. You know that Vidya Vinaya Sampane, an educated person sees equally. And then a few verses later in 5:22, it says, an intelligent person, a Buddha, one who's intelligent, is able to control the senses. He doesn't go after... So these are kind of the standards of wisdom. And my question is, because I'm kind of thinking about two other experiences, because we all retaliate. One famous incident, my personal experience is that several years ago, someone ignored me. They were serving everyone cake. Then they ignored me the first time. So I was like, okay. Then they start serving seconds, and they skipped me again. So then I exploded. But now, you know, I have a little wisdom, I like to think.
Now you just go to the bake sale and get your own piece of cake.
Exactly. So I may not explode now, but still there's, if somebody's, because finally we all have feelings, and our feelings get hurt. But we may not, you know, react in an explosive way, because we have some sort of wisdom, but there's still internal wisdom. So my question is that in regards to this verse, is that we can only develop like pure devotional service by the mercy of a pure devotee. And so my question is that how do we know that the association we're getting from, let's say, Diksha or several Shikshas, how do we know if, let's say, we're getting the proper instructions from them, if they're inspiring us properly, if we still have some internal reaction? How do we know it's not still anartha nivritti? How long, like, we still go after, you know,
anartha nivritti is the longest of the progressions in devotional service. Anartha nivritti takes the longest. Because you have enough anarthas from millions of lifetimes. And they're, you know, they have to be removed from the heart. So, of course, they can be removed in one sense. They can be removed immediately. But it's a little rude. It's a little rude. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Anyway, the idea is that we know... Those of us who are in practicing Krishna consciousness, we have the Shastra. We have many, like you said, Shiksha Gurus. We have Diksha Guru. We have our Param Shiksha Guru, which is Srila Prabhupada. And we have to know. We have to look. We have to study. We have to find out so that we can see when something is unclear. And then we have to also be humble enough that when, even though we know, something still remains unclear, then we seek guidance, just like Arjuna. Arjuna, he knew a lot of things. All the arguments he gave why he shouldn't fight were all good arguments. They were born from scripture, they were thinking of the welfare, the ultimate welfare of society. They were all very valid arguments. And as he described those arguments, he became more and more aware, for various reasons. Vishwanath Chakravarti describes that he was actually seeing in Krishna's face. Krishna's face was like, okay, tell me the next one. Yeah, that's a good one. I'll try another one. And so he was watching Krishna and seeing he wasn't buying any of his arguments. You know, he could tell by his body language that he wasn't buying any of his arguments. So he kept, well, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one. And finally he said, okay, I'm out of arguments. I don't know what to do. I'm confused about duty and I don't know what to do. Therefore, please instruct me. And then Krishna turned around and said, okay, you're a fool. But Krishna didn't say anything in between there. Because we have to come to the point where, in humility, we come and we say, okay, I thought I knew everything, but now I see maybe there's at least one thing I don't know. Can you please describe it? So in order to even know what you don't know, you have to have an open heart. You have to have humility. So cultivating humility as the first of the processes of devotional service, the process of knowledge, the first thing is humility. Cultivating humility, careful study, good association, and a lot of association. A lot of association. Then you understand in a well-rounded perspective. Devotees are broad-minded. And they understand that in different circumstances, different application may be there. And they have a broad view. So they seek out guidance which will, you know, help them evolve in spiritual life. But as you were hearing the other day, you also have to do your part. You have to live in the mode of goodness. Because if you're not in the mode of goodness, or at least attempting to enter into the mode of goodness, the mode of passion will wreak havoc on, even when you know what to do, trying to do it will be very difficult because the senses will be out of control and the mind will be weak. The intelligence is even weaker. And so if you ever went horseback riding and you lost control of the reins, you're in trouble. You know you're in trouble. Then the horse is like a crazy person and it's riding away and there you are. And, you know, if you don't get control back quick, you're on the ground looking up. So you need to cultivate that quality of humility so that you can seek guidance, and you need to cultivate the quality of good, the qualities of goodness by actions in goodness, by association in goodness, by hearing in goodness. We had some activities in our class where we were experiencing some actions that weren't in goodness, were in passion music, for instance, in passion and ignorance. And when you're around those kind of sounds, those kinds of actions, they influence your consciousness. So they're all pervading in this material world. Therefore, we take shelter in the temple, we take shelter of devotees, we take shelter of prasadam. When you go out to eat, for instance, sometimes we think we have to go to a vegetarian restaurant that doesn't serve garlic and onions, maybe. But do you know what's, you read the ingredients and you try to find something that isn't contaminated, but it doesn't say lust, anger, and greed on the ingredients, but they're in there. So when we do things that bring lust, anger, and greed into ourselves, then we have to rush to the shower, of the holy name, of the association of devotees, because sometimes we're exposed, We're exposed. We walk in, there's Muzak playing, and they're playing some song that you knew, and then all day you have this thing running around in your brain, and you want to get it out. So then you have to take shelter of kirtan, take shelter of the devotees, and do some purging, some purification. So if you cultivate the mode of goodness in your life, and you associate with saintly persons and persons and the shastra, then you'll be sure to make progress. Guaranteed. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? We should stop. It's late. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol. Hari Bol.
What are the standards to determine what is the same degree?
Well, I just want to give this to him before.